This is the Alpaca Podcast for all things alpaca. If you're an owner, a soon-to-be owner, a want-to-be owner, or are just alpaca mad or love the fleece, welcome to the Alpaca Tribe. I'm Steve Hetherington. Hi, Steve here, and welcome to the podcast for alpaca people. It's great to see you again. When people visit here and meet the alpacas, there are some questions that they regularly will ask. Let's run through some of them. One that they regularly will want to know is, how did you get started? How did you get started with alpacas? Why alpacas? It's an interesting question. It's that kind of, I can't quite see it. I can't quite get it. I don't know that I can see myself choosing to suddenly start keeping alpacas. So why did you do it? And the answer is complicated, really. I think people, when they experience alpacas, there's a connection. Everyone likes alpacas, but some people really connect with alpacas. And I think I'm just one of those people. And luckily, my wife, Sue, she's one of those people too. So we connected with alpacas. We went to see some. And that was where we really decided, yes, we'd like to. We'd already considered some of the practicalities. So we found ourselves, as we were walking around this farm, asking the questions, lots of questions, checking out the things that we thought we'd understood and had already found out about. But we were starting to find that we were talking about when, not if. We were talking about this one. Oh, and that's when we first met Hermione, of course. And that was our, we need to include Hermione in any choice of animals. If we're going to have alpacas, Hermione should be in the mix. It's one of those things that we need to consider, the practicalities, the financial commitments, the long-term care commitments in terms of looking after animals. And is this a sustainable idea, or is it just a romantic notion? So we do need to think about those things. And we had. Had we considered everything, dotted every I, crossed every T? No, I don't think we did. So I'm not expecting that or demanding that of you. If you are thinking of having alpacas, it is worth asking around, talking, going seeing, spending some time, etc., etc. And really testing it. Is this something that you really want to do? And I think if you've started asking those kind of questions, it probably is something that you really want to do. So yeah, that's how we got started. And that's how other people often get started. It's meeting alpacas. Do they spit? Often people will ask, do they spit? Now, this is when particularly they've heard an alpaca spitting at one of the other alpacas. This is usually at the time of when we're doing the feedings, and there's a bit of competition trying to get heads into the bowls, into the buckets which people are holding. And occasionally people will get spat at, not because the alpacas are spitting at them. They just happen to be facing their direction. They're warning off other alpacas who are trying to crowd in on the food, and they're trying to warn them off not to come in there. And because they're facing in the direction of the person, if they do spit, that it's going to hit the person who's holding the bucket. It seems very unfair. I'm sorry, this is really fair. I think this is a question people ask because of the unknown nature of alpacas. They haven't spent enough time around them to really be able to read the alpacas, to have experience of this is what alpacas will do. And they do know that alpacas spit. They have heard that. So it is a concern. Oh, they're not going to spit at me, are they? I'm sorry. I don't think I would want to be spat at if I was meeting my alpacas for the first time. In fact, I don't like being spat at, and I've had them for years. So it's not a pleasant thing. That's the point, actually. This is a breakaway skill that the alpacas have. It's a protective measure to be able to dissuade potential threats from coming any closer. So, yes, they do spit, but it's not normal. You have to work hard at making them spit normally. If you read the signs incorrectly, then you can make a mistake and they'll spit at you. If you go too close, nose to nose to them, they see that as a threat and they'll spit at you. That's one of these things of understanding alpacas enough. They're not, at the drop of a hat, going to spit at you normally. There's an occasional one who's more prone to do that. But take a lead from people you're with as you're meeting these alpacas, and you'll discover that actually it's pretty infrequent that alpacas will spit at a stranger. They'll be a bit on edge, they'll be a bit wary, but if you're calm and gentle, then they're unlikely to spit at you. So yes, they do, but it's unlikely, and you have to work hard at making them spit. Do they get foot rot like sheep? And I can understand why people ask that. They know that sheep can get lame, can have problems with foot rot, and you have to deal with it. And it sounds a bit awkward, isn't it, to kind of take hold of this thing and poke around and try and treat it. Well, no, they don't. They don't get foot rot in the same way because they haven't got a hoof. The foot rot in sheep gets in and goes in to the through the hoof and gets underneath it. An alpaca doesn't have a hoof, so you're not going to get the same kind of thing. So it's not the same. But they can get problems with the pads. They have a pad. It's much more like a dog's paw than a sheep's foot. But they can get infections. They can get injuries that become infected and become swollen. They can, you know, can be a thorn or something that can actually cause an infection. Then you get a little abscess. So it is possible that they're going to get a problem. But it's not the same. And it's not a routine thing that happens in the same way that foot rot can in sheep. So yes and no. That's one of my answers that's going to keep coming back. It's true, yes, but not quite. They're the same but different. They're not quite the same as sheep. They're not just sheep with long legs and long necks. There are similarities, but there are great differences between them too. How much do they cost? Sometimes people will ask me. Well, yeah, that's a good question. It all depends. And it's going to be a few hundred pounds to a few hundred, quite a number of hundreds. It depends on the quality of the animal, depends on the age, depends whether it's a breeding animal, and what's the parentage? What's the bloodline here? What's the quality of the animal that you're getting? Sometimes you can't really tell if they're young. You can't really tell in great detail what the animal is going to be like as it gets older and how it's going to maintain that quality of fleece over a period of time. But you can look at the bloodlines. You can see what the other offspring of those, the dam and the sire, have produced, and get an idea of the quality. And the better quality, the ones that are more likely to win shows, are going to cost more. The ones that are top quality fleece, really fine, good density, good coverage, good conformation, so the body structure is good, fit for purpose, then all of those things tend to make an animal worth more. If the fleece isn't quite so good, is coarser, it's really kind of more for the pet market rather than for the show end of things or for high level breeding, then the value is going to be less. So it's always worth spending money enough to get the best quality that you can. It's a good investment, particularly if you're looking at a breeding herd. But at the same time, yeah, it's not essential to have a really expensive animal to really enjoy keeping alpacas. So the price is going to vary, depends on their age, depends on the quality, etc. So have a look around. Don't be in a hurry, please. That's probably my advice on that front. Don't be in a hurry. Try and get a sense of what's going on. But remember too that you're buying the owner, or access to the owner, as well as the animal itself. It's not just buying something off the shelf. It's worth developing a relationship, making a choice that you're buying from someone that you can work with, that you can get support from going forward. So that's worth thinking about when you're doing the calculation about how much they're going to cost. Do you shear them? Well, that's usually not a question about do you shear alpacas? It's usually a question of do I shear these alpacas? And how often do you do that? Well, it's once a year. And yes, I do. Probably more unusual that I do my own shearing. Sue and I work as a team and we work very well. But it is hard work. And often people will bring a shearer in. They've got the equipment, they've got the experience, and they're able to do, if it's only a few animals, they can do them quickly. It's quite a major undertaking to think of getting all set up and having the equipment, having the mats, the shears, the getting them sharpened, knowing what you're doing, having enough confidence and experience to do it well and safely for the animal and for yourself. And therefore, bringing in a shearer, if it's only a few animals, that's probably a good way to go. Not wanting to put you off shearing, it's a good skill to have, but it's not essential. So once a year, you're not going to do it more often than that. And picking your time can be challenging, but you're looking at the weather, particularly the weather at night. You don't want to take all the fleece off too early in the year when there's still frost around here in the UK in the evenings, and therefore you're running into problems. So just bear that in mind. But yes, I do my own shearing, and you can learn. And it's something, the more you do, the better you get at it. The first one each year is always a challenge because I'm trying to get back into the swing of things. I'm trying to develop a sense of, is it this way? Do I start with this leg? How do I? No, it comes back very quickly. So people are asking about shearing because it's one of those things that's going to need to be done. They know it needs to be done. And they probably are starting from the assumption that it's going to be difficult for them to do for themselves. So this question of how do you get the animal sheared? And that's a good question to be asking because it's important. Good welfare question. What do they eat? Well, yeah. Often this is around the question of what else are you giving them in addition to grass? You know they eat the grass. And they'll also browse, take leaves from trees. Got to be careful which trees they are, but essentially they will do that. And also brambles. They love the green there, and they'll take the fruit as well as the leaves from brambles. And they'll eat a lot of grass, but they'll pick and mix. They don't necessarily clear a whole area around the poo pile where there's a lot of nutrients. It'll cause the grass to grow green and luscious, but it's not the first place they're going to go to eat the grass. So just bear that in mind. There are some areas you're still going to have to cut the grass and mow it or top it or strim it at least. And having enough space for the animals, enough good grazing, is important. The additional things are supplements. So the dry food is really a supplement. Don't think of that as the main food. It's actually a supplement to the grass. The fiber, the grass, the hay that they're going to have access to, all of those things are giving them the feed that they really need. The dry food is a supplement to add in some trace minerals and the kind of things that the extra bits they need, and also for it to have a balance, so they're making sure they're getting enough of the protein, etc. Often when we're doing the feeding, you know, what's in here? Well, all of it is wheat-based. That's become more expensive, but it's also going to have other things in there and some of the other cereals and also some peas probably, maybe. They do like their peas. My alpacas certainly like their peas. You want to give an alpaca a treat? I think dried peas are probably the best. So there you go. How many can you keep? How much space do they need? How much land do you need to have to be able to keep alpacas? Well, you do need quite a bit. You're running at something like 5 to the acre. Now, if you've only got 1 acre, 5's too many. I would think 3 is, even then, is a bit of a stretch. If you really need a few acres of land, you're going to be able to move them around. There are some areas that are going to get wet. There are some areas that as I said, they're going to graze this bit, but not that bit. So being able to move them around. They also like the stimulation. If you've got more land and you can move them to different fields, they really like that. No, it stimulates. They're interested, and they do like moving to the new field. My girls have got much more freedom, and they can choose which direction to go. And there are times when they'll go further down the green path onto a field they don't go to so often, or further down into the woods. And it's just they want to do something different. They want to have some grazing from a different place, and they like doing that. So if you can give them more space, that's good. But you need to be aware that they don't eat as much food as sheep or cattle. They're going to be in a situation where they're going to be having the grazing, and not all of it's going to get taken right down. So if you can contain them into a smaller area and then balance that up so that they're contained enough to graze it down to a lower level, not too short, but to a lower level before you move them into a different space, then it will allow them to rotate through those different grazing areas and allow the grass to recover and for them to really enjoy what they're eating. Having a mixture of things in there is better. The kind of grass, not monoculture, but a mixture of things in there, the different herbs and things we talked about in the first, things like timothy and some of the shorter grasses rather than just the tall and ones that you'd use for producing hay if you're going to do your own hay. So fresh grass is what they like, the new growth coming through. They much prefer that if they can have that. So how many can you keep to an acre? Well, something like 5 to the acre, but you've got to have enough acres to do that. So be careful about that. It has to be usable land and enough space there. Some shelter, natural shelter is good, as well as providing field shelters. So 3 to 5 to the acre. High density, you're going to have more problems with parasites, potentially. And if there are there, the worm burden can build up if you're just in a very small space and they're there all the time. So just think about those things, as much land as you can, but recognizing they're not going to keep it all really short for you. You're going to have to do some maintenance as well in terms of topping or strimming. Are they hardy animals? Well, they seem to cope pretty well with the weather here in South Wales. We got it very wet, not so much cold. It gets cold in the winter, but we don't have a lot of snow. Other places, they have a lot of snow, and they manage. So, yes, they are hardy animals in the main. They're herd animals and will hide things. The weakest one gets picked off by predators, so in general, they will tend to hide any illness or sickness, because that makes them look weak and more likely an easy target for predators. So they will tend to, you need to get used to them and know what's normal and regularly kind of check them over. But also, if sometimes you just get a sense, this animal's, they're just not quite right. It's not, I don't know what it is, but they're not quite right. Take notice of that. Put it on a watch list and keep an eye on them. But generally, yes, they seem to be pretty hardy, my experience. Where do they come from? Oh, there's a good question. Well, mine came from Devon. No, that wasn't the question you were asking, was it? The question is not the farm, the breeder that I got my animals from or somebody got their animals from, but they're interested, you know, where's their native? What's native to them? Where do they come from? Because there's not that many around. Where do they originate from? Where are they coming from? So it's South America, and it's Peru, Chile. It's the high plains. It's the Andes, essentially, where you're going to find a lot of alpacas. But they're all over the place now. You're going to find them in America. You're going to find them in Australia and New Zealand. You're going to find them in Canada. You're going to find them in lots of European countries, here in the UK, Ireland, etc. So they're all over the place now. There's a lot of spread of alpacas around the world. They've become much more popular. But origination, yes, they come from South American. South American camelids is the group that they're part of, and that's where they're coming from. So Peru, Chile, some of the other countries as well, but Peru and Chile, particularly Peru. A question that I do get asked, this is the last one now. What's the difference between an alpaca and a llama? Often this comes after I've just picked up somebody who said, so how long have you been keeping llamas? Okay, I've spent all my time taking them around, showing them the alpacas, and I've only ever used the word alpaca. And then they go, how long have you kept llamas? And I go, I don't keep llamas. Oh, I've tried to be generous and gracious when I answer that question, when they get it wrong. I don't know what it is. There's a strong association in people's minds between llamas and alpacas. Now, they are related. Obviously, they're kind of fairly close cousins. You've got the guanaco and the vicuña in South America as the wild versions. You've got the domesticated llamas and alpacas. A llama is much taller. The ears are different. The size of the animal is just a lot bigger. They're stronger. They're often used as pack animals, the llamas, rather than alpacas. Alpacas are not really built for that. They're fiber animals, whereas the llamas, not really. They do have some, would you call it fleece? I hesitated there. They've got hair, certainly. Some of it can be very coarse. Some of it can be quite nice, but they don't need to be sheared in quite the same way or as frequently. They have areas of legs and often up the neck and around the head, which have much less fleece than an alpaca. But they speak a similar language, but not quite the same language, I think. But they're very similar. They do, right? But the size is the biggest thing, the biggest difference. And also the way the head looks and the ears. The ears on a llama are more banana-shaped, is how people refer to them, because they've got a bend on them, and they kind of touch towards each other, looking at the head, looking at the nose towards them. The ears are kind of up and over towards the middle, towards each other, touching each other. Not literally touching each other, but just moving towards that. Whereas the alpaca ears are shorter, and they're called spade-like. I don't know that I've seen a spade in the same shape, but they're kind of pointed. But essentially, there are ears that stick up, and they're parallel and then come to a point. They're not bent over, and that's another difference that you'll see between them. Different alpacas and llamas. So there you go. There are lots of questions that people ask, and I don't know whether you've got any. Have you got any questions about alpacas that you kind of things that you're curious about? You'll know some of them general stuff. And you'll know some of the things if you've got your own alpacas. You'll know quite a lot of things. But are there any questions that you've got that you're not sure about? I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to try and I'll offer a stab at an answer. If you want to send me a question, we can pick it up in one of the future episodes. It's steve@alpacatribe.com. I'd love to hear from you. So hopefully that was a quick overview of the kind of questions that people are asking and may have answered some of your questions. So if you're thinking about keeping alpacas, think hard, think clearly, talk to people who've got them, and do go and see some. But be prepared for the fact that you might end up owning some of your own. So if you can, go spend some time with the alpacas, either yours or somebody else's, and take care. See you again soon. Bye for now. This is the Alpaca Tribe, and I'm Steve Hetherington. Have a great day.